You're listening to Beyond 1894, a podcast dedicated to updating you on research, innovation, and campus life happening at Louisiana Tech University.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Beyond 1894. This is Carter Carroll, the university videographer inside the Office of University Communications here at Louisiana Tech. Today, I'm joined by a friend of mine, Joey Slaughter, associate professor in the School of Design, who has an emphasis on sculpture. Joey, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So, Joey, just to start off with, where are you from and what got you into art?
Okay. Well, I was raised in Junction City, Arkansas, and around my junior year, I lived in Ruston and went back and forth from Ruston to Junction City for school. I got interested in art because my mom's an artist, and she went to Tech, and she got her MFA, but she was always interested in art, and as a kid, she'd roll paper out down the hallway to keep us active away from her art, you know, so I was always drawing. And then I think probably around seventh grade, I just knew that I was going to be an artist, you know. There's no question about it, you know. Whatever it took, I was going to be an artist. So it started, it's been there forever.
That's awesome. I love stories like that. So Tech is in your blood then?
It is. In a way. It's been here in... I went to undergrad in Memphis, though, but it's, you know, I was around Tech and the professors and all that in high school, so I knew a lot of the former professors here, and yeah, so they helped me a lot, too, in high school. They gave me advice, and so I've always been surrounded by artists, yeah.
That's awesome. Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Ruston High in 11th grade for a semester, but I went back to Junction City. Sorry, I went back to Junction City to finish up my degree in high school. So yeah.
Awesome.
Not much art there, though.
Not much art in Junction City.
No.
So you said you went to college in Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did you study there? Art.
In Memphis, I went to school for graphic design because, you know, I grew up skateboarding and I was really influenced by the graphics on the bottom of the decks. And so I would always draw those and trace those out and, you know, just wanted to be in that style. It was always, more graphic at that time, a lot of skulls and like bright colors in the 80s and 90s. And so that's still with me today. But like when I went to Memphis, I was going to be a graphic designer because I wanted to do that. You know, I just wanted to be involved in that scene and that culture. But over time, they kind of beat out the graphic design sense in me. They're like, no, you need to do like painting and sculpture and stuff. So I finally got my degree in emphasis, I should say, in painting, actually. Yeah. And then in Memphis, they had a program that they would send a student to New York to study for a semester. And my junior year, I got to do that, and my little brain exploded when I went to New York and saw the artwork that I was seeing in textbooks, and, you know, just, I was just amazed, and that just changed everything. You know, it was a different way of thinking than the school at Memphis. Not to say it was bad, but it was just more contemporary. Like, let's look at people who are alive today doing this, and let's go have them come over to the studio and talk to you. And so that was a moment being there that I was like, I can really do this because these guys are doing it, you know? And so that really inspired me to think, okay, I need to go to grad school to really do this, to get attention and to learn more about what I want to do. So that Memphis to New York and then back to finish out my degree in 1997. And so, yeah. I did take a break off. I did take a year off before grad school, though. That was really important.
Yeah.
At that point, I was like, maybe I want to do something different. Let me take a year off and work. And so having a year working, just doing random jobs, made me go, I want to go back to my dream, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's important to chase those dreams, I think, a lot of times.
It is. You know, with art, though, everybody needs an artist. They do for you think about anything you do, everybody needs an artist, whether it's a phone, graphics, you know, to design the lid on coffee, whatever it is. Everybody needs, you just got to be able to plug yourself into many different ways of working to make this happen, you know? I don't think you, as an artist today, you can survive just doing, most people can't, just doing one specific thing, you know? But I kind of learned that later on, though.
Yeah. But, yeah. So you did your time in New York and in Memphis, but what led you back to Ruston?
So I have to go through this story real quick because I was never coming back to the South, you know, when I went to Memphis. I was, even though it was the South, it was like not the South.
Yeah, you're kinda, like North, you know? South.
And so when I went to New York, I was talking to people and they were like, wow, you know, it was so New York centric, really. And people were like, you do art in the South? You know, they couldn't understand that other people, like people in the South, actually make art, you know, or contemporary art too. It's just kind of, it's different now, I think. But after going there, I was like, okay, I want to go to grad school. So I went to grad school and I studied painting at Cranbrook in Michigan. It's right outside of Bloomfield Hills. Very cold. I don't like the cold very long. I like it for a little while, you know. But the school was great, but there was like six of us in that program. And we all said, let's go to where the weather is more consistent. So we moved to LA and we had a great studio there. We had a music recording studio. We had a wood shop, metal shop, and we had our own studios in there. But the hustle of LA was pretty intense to try to make a living. You know, I was doing gallery work, installing work. I got to work for a lot of great artists that I respect, and that was fantastic experience, especially when it comes into teaching. It comes back into teaching for me a lot with the way that we present our work and the professional practice part of it. But I met Jessica, my wife, and when I came back in 2001 to visit, right before 9/11 happened, and I got stuck here, and so I was able to spend some time getting to know her by just being around for a little while. And so she, just like her, our just meeting her and then going back to California, the jobs weren't available that were so readily available because the morale was down. People weren't looking at art. And so the shows kind of continued for a couple of months. And I was like, well, I'm not making any money. I really like this girl. I'm going back, you know, for a little while, just see what happens. And so I came back and in 2002, okay, she brought me back here, you know. That was just, I don't know, I was just ready for a change too. That grind was tough. But I came back here and I was here for about 6 months and Grambling had a professor leave and they asked me if I wanted to come on and teach. I really didn't go to grad school to teach. I didn't want to really do that because my mom taught. And she was like, teaching kind of drains your creativity. You may want to be careful of how much work you do in the creative field and come home and try to make work. I find it really inspiring, though. It makes me make work, teaching, you know?
Yeah, I definitely understand that. As somebody who makes videos full-time, you know, I often go home and I'm like, do I really want to work on this side project? Do I really want to work on this next short film or this next documentary thing? And I'm like, sometimes you just got to do it. But then there are times, and I actually find this to be true, exactly what you just said, because there are a lot of times when I go over and see student work, or like I'll have a student ask me to review something that they've worked on, or I'll go shoot something over in the TVAC, and I'm like, this is so inspiring to me.
Really? That's
cool. Yeah, like when I went and shot in your class a few weeks ago or a month ago, I left and I was like, dang, like these kids, like who, I mean, to be fair, I'm not much older than a lot of them, but
I call them kids too.
but I'm like, dang, these kids are so incredible with what they do. And it inspires me too when I see their work.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, especially towards the end of the quarter, when the final assignment's there and everybody's like, I got to get it done. And they're grinding away like that. You came at a great time to see that.
Yeah, I saw the pictures from that final class. That was an intro to sculpture class, right?
Yep.
Some of that work, I wouldn't have told you that was an intro class. Like they were, yeah. I was really impressed with a lot of what I saw.
Thank you. It's a step-by-step kind of class where you do a basic thing and it builds on the previous experience. Yeah. But it's amazing what the students can do. We have everything at the school to make your dreams. So like, you know, that's why I tell some students, if you can't make your dreams here, you may want to check yourself because we have all the equipment, you know.
Yeah,
that's we really for sure. do.
All the equipment and the facilities. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I think a lot of knowledge from a lot of our faculty.
We have great faculty.
Goes a long way.
We really do. And I have friends that come down from Memphis and all over the place. And like, man, you guys have so much more equipment than we do. How do you get all this equipment? And, you know, they just don't have people writing grants like or whatever it is. I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely an important part of it. And I think that goes a long way with what our students are able to do and able to learn here. I think another great thing that the School of Design does really well is bringing in people for lectures and for other galleries and whatnot.
Yes. Yeah, that's really important. That's why I went to Cranbrook, is because I looked at their list of visiting artists, and that's really where you learn a lot, is just having people come in and just having a conversation with you. You know, because, you know, it also, the funny thing about having the visiting artist is you get get someone else to say the same thing in a different way. And so the students go, oh, yeah. And that's when it resonates, when someone else says it. You're like, I've been telling you this forever. But they told it in a different way, and that's good. So you need people telling you the same things and just different approaches to it, you know. And that, you know, I think it takes like, one of my friends told me a good, effective teacher teaches the same thing five different ways, you know. I think that's kind of true, but you just never know.
Yeah. Words can have a different impact. You can say one thing one way and then say it a totally different way. And
it's really true. I can tell that with an assignment. I'm like, oh, I didn't say it that way this time. So they're not doing the same. They're not approaching it the same way. And I should have said it this way, you know.
So I've seen from your social media and from your wife's, who I have known Jessica for many years. I knew her when she was the director of NICLAC.
Right.
I used to be on the film board. So I used to meet with her like once a week for a while. But I see that you have a really cool gallery coming up. Is that right?
The gallery show?
Yes.
That was in New Orleans.
I
just had that. It was a month of December. It just came down, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I missed it.
That was an amazing show for me. Just trying to just get that work done in this time period of COVID and everything. I really wasn't sure if the show was going to happen, but just getting to have that Thanksgiving holiday working I don't know. It was like, I enjoyed being in the studio more than I ever have because over the last 2 years, I haven't had that much opportunity, you know? So having a deadline is important.
So you are working on something that I think is really cool. You are a part of this Ruston Skate Park project.
Yes.
So, to backtrack a little bit, when did you start skateboarding?
I think I was 12. I skated heavily from 12 to 18. And I stopped because I had jaw surgery and I didn't want to get that done again.
You know?
So during that time, skateboarding, again, I said this earlier, was like, it solidified me to be an artist and musician because the skateboarding culture is heavily rooted in art and music. So as a kid, I would just get the magazines and read them cover to cover and get videos and watch them over and over to learn tricks. Cause I had a lot of people come, I had a half pipe. So I had a lot of people coming to my ramp on the weekends from 100-mile radius. And I got to meet a lot of people, and skate with them and talk to them. And even when I went to Memphis, I ran into people that I skated with on my ramp. You know, they're like, oh, hey, I skated your ramp. You know, like, yeah, I remember you. So you kind of have a friend wherever you go with that. And the thing about skateboarding in high school, junior high, high school, was that it just gave me something to do. I didn't really like team sports, you know? And that's another motivator behind this project is there are a lot of kids that aren't doing anything because they don't fit into a certain team or whatever. I'm not saying team sports are bad, but it's just not for everybody. And so we started this project in 2016. Miguel LaSala in architecture talked to the mayor about it, and he thought it would be a good idea, and so we have a spot. And everything was a go until the hurricanes and the tornadoes, COVID. It pushed everything back. So what we did is I met with the mayor in 2020, November 2020, and said, I did this petition online. I hope to get 200 signatures, but I got 2,500 signatures of support. And he's like, well, we have to pay attention to that. So we met back and forth, and he said that, you know, we came to the conclusion that if we made a certain amount of money at that time, then we would get the project going. So I had to form a nonprofit and get a board together, and oh man, it's like 3 hours a day, you know, I'd work on this. But I decided that if I can get the community around this, then it'll be an easy go. And if I can get my students involved with this, it should be another way to give them some professional practice. So my goal from the beginning is like, get my students involved to teach them something and to get the town to understand the need. And so that's been what we've been focusing on. So we've done pop-ups in stores, and we started a corporate sponsorship packet, and we've taken that around to the local businesses. And under 3 months, we've raised $43,000.
That's awesome.
And we have plans to involve students in the community even more going forward. We're writing grants, and we're having a big fundraiser in May. It's just starting, but we're going to have some big name people on board with that. Tony Hawk's one of them, and Steve Olson, some musicians and other skaters and artists too. And I'm going to involve some tech students in it just to sprinkle the love around, you know. And we hope to raise $30,000 from that. It's going to be an online auction, but we're going to have a fundraiser actually in place here too at, I'm not sure the location, but it should be a good time to, you know, it's like music, skateboarding, art, and food, you know. And I think it'll be a good time for all. So. Yeah, so I answer a lot in that one. But
oh, that's great. I've seen that Tony Hawk's, is it Skate Park Foundation? Is that what it's called?
The Skate Park Project, yeah.
They have given a grant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got $10,000 from them.
Which I feel like that's a pretty big deal.
That's a huge thing because it gets you on a list of registries for skate parks. So if someone was traveling down I-20 and they did a search for skate park, it would be like Ruston, you know. It just kind of builds a community where it seems more legit. And having the reason why Tony Hawk started that foundation was because he found that going to skate parks at like cities where they'd spend a lot of money, but they wouldn't get the proper people to build it. And if you get a grant from his foundation, you have to get someone who has at least built 5 skate parks. It's like,
wow.
And it has to be no fence, and it has to be accessible from morning to night. There's really certain requirements for it, you know?
Yeah.
So it makes the cities understand that the proper way to build them, you know? So they're, you know, I've been to some really bad skate parks that they spent a lot of money on. There's big cracks in between the joints, the concrete, and, people fall all the time on them, and it's just not safe.
You know? Yeah, it's dangerous.
It actually is. So with his foundation, he made that because of those situations. And then recently, did you see the Instagram thing?
Yeah, I did.
Oh my goodness, man.
That was crazy. Tell us about, for those who do not know what we're talking about, Joey had a skate deck signed by Tony Hawk, and that was a surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, you just never know when something's going to come through, but a friend in town has a friend that is in Florida, and it was a really quick turnaround. Like, can you design a deck in 3 days? Tony Hawk may come and do a podcast with us type of thing, and if he's here, then he could sign it. And I was like, sure, yeah, I did it. So I designed something and sent it there, and they actually went out and got it printed at a shop.
Okay.
Just for us.
Wow.
It's just amazing, the kindness. There's people, it's just coming out a lot with this project. It's kind of overwhelming, you know, to the support. So this has been like right before Thanksgiving, I think. And Tuesday, I got this text, and I had a picture of Tony Hawk signing that deck. I almost fell out. I was just like, what? I could not believe it. It's like, I almost like lifelong goal, you know, to get to skate with him. So I sent him a thank you on Instagram and told, you know, in the post I was saying it was a dream of mine as a kid to get to go skate with Tony Hawk. I didn't think he would answer to it, but he sent me a message saying, come out anytime and skate my ramp. His private space, you know? And so now I have to go practice.
It's a pretty good excuse to go practice.
Yeah, it is. It is. So I sent him a message last night. I said, I turned 50 in November. It sounds like a good 50th birthday present for me to go there, you know? And so he gave me the contact to, if I wanted to go.
Wow. That would be incredible.
It's pretty shocking. It's like, yeah, it's great.
It's cool that the story sort of comes full circle of you went to school because you wanted to design skateboards,
yeah, or
design the designs on decks, and now because of this project you're working on now to better our community and help, you know, young people have a safe place to skate. Like, you now have a skateboard that's been signed that you designed by the biggest person in skateboard.
I know, you know, it's so crazy. And the thing about it though is like, I was like, I really want that, but I'm like, I can't. I gotta auction it off, you know, for the greater good. But he is going to donate another deck for just one of his personal ones and sign it. He said that he would do that too.
That's really awesome.
And so that makes the other people have a reason, I think, to be a part of something. Yeah. You know, someone who's like, I don't know about that. But they see Tony Hawk's involved. Like, yeah, I want to do that.
Well, and if they see that he's involved twice,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Even more incentive.
Exactly, man. Like, yeah, it's true. I haven't thought about that. What you just showed me was that full circle thing. But yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Very grateful for that, you know.
It's really awesome. And, you know, it's like you just said, the auction is for the greater good. The skate park is for the greater good. And I think that that's going to have a lasting impact once it gets once it gets built. You know, I think that's going to have a really big lasting impact on this community. Because I've lived in Ruston my whole life, and I was like you. I wasn't really interested in team sports. I played them for a little while, but it really was never my thing. And I always, you know, now looking back, I'm like, well, if I had had a skate park, or if I had friends who were interested in skateboarding, I probably would have gotten involved with that. I think that probably would have been good for me at a younger age.
It's a good, I mean, it's good exercise.
Yeah.
It's, and it's like you fall down, you get back up, you know, you learn discipline, and there's lots of great things from it. You know, it's not even, I think it's like the eighth most dangerous sport, or 10th or something like that. Like, basketball is number one most dangerous, with more injuries, I should say. I was researching that. I have had to do a lot of research on, because people ask those questions a lot when I go talk to people. They're like, well, it's really dangerous, right? I'm like, nope. It's really not, you know? And it's cheap. You know, you look at the amount of money it costs to play baseball, especially a traveling ball. It's a lot of money, and most kids can't afford that. But there's a good thing about a skate park is those baseball fields and football fields in the summertime are mostly empty. You can drive by a skate park any time of year and see 10 kids there. So, and it's going to bring, it has an economic value too for our town. People come in off I-20, they stop in, they get hungry, they go eat, or we have competitions, they fill hotels.
Especially with the proposed location of it, you know, not very far at all from downtown.
Exactly, it's perfect.
I think it's a great spot because you've got a ton of restaurants right there, a lot of local businesses that people, you know, especially like if parents bring their kids to go skate, those parents are going to wander into those stores.
Right.
There's a lot of great economic potential for especially that location.
Yeah, I think our downtown wants that, and they're hungry for it, and I think it will take place, you know. Another thing that's part of the skate park is really important to me is phase two. Phase one is just the skate park. Phase two is an art park too, where we'll have public sculptures and then like five spots for murals.
Wow.
So we'll get local people and national calls, and we're working with NICLAC we'll be working with them to get that accomplished. They'll do calls for it. And then have the students involved. You know?
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So the sculptures will rotate. There will be some permanent ones. And there will be some memorials there for people who, you know, they're skated and passed away or something locally that I've talked to some families about. And so all that just comes around just showing how important it could be. You know, it's like, it'll be, I don't know, I'm just very excited about it. It's a passion. It's a kind of like a lifelong goal to give back to that sport that gave so much to me. And so I do that as a professor too in my classes. If we have skate jams, I get the kids to paint. I say kids too, but the students to paint on the ramps, and sometimes they design with me and help me build them and stuff. So
yeah, the skate jam is always awesome. I always love going through the halls and seeing all of them. Yeah,
it's so much fun.
Again, our students are incredibly talented. Mm-hmm. We've got some very bright minds over in the school design.
Yeah, and the logos too. We've had students design, I think, all the logos that we've made for t-shirts, mm-hmm. except for the Run DMC one, you know, the Rustin DMC. But we've had students who designed the main logo, and they've worked on the new logo that we have too.
That's awesome.
So we want to give some professional practice in the mix.
Of course. And there are other tech professors involved in this well, right?
Yeah, we have Kevin Singh in architecture, and he's done a lot of modeling for what the park will look like, him and his students in the community activism class. And then Tom Futrell's graphic design students have designed stuff. He's on the board too. And then Frank Hamrick is a photographer. He's on the board. He's a professor here too. And he's doing video and photos at the skate jam. And let's see who else. So I made this board up of people, the nonprofit board of people that I knew loved skateboarding and music and had some kind of tie back, but still could offer like the love of the project.
Right.
And like Randy Braddock is the financial advisor, and he's just amazing help in ways that I can't even think about, you know. I can't think about the three-dimensional space will look like Kevin can, or the videos and stuff that Frank does, and the graphic design that Tom does. So what I learned from this at the beginning of this year, at the beginning of 2020, is I can't do it myself.
Yep.
I thought I could, but you can't.
Yep.
that was the greatest thing to realize.
Yes. It's also one of the hardest things to accept, I think, often, is that we as artists sometimes are like, oh, I can do all this by myself. And I'm like, sometimes I'm like, no, I need like seven more people to help me on this
thing. You really do. Especially when it comes to making, you know, big projects like this, or like big sculptures or whatever it may be. You can't do all that yourself. You know, we talk about that in my advanced sculpture class about public art. And so I'm working with the students to build that up, to do public sculptures around campus and town. I'm like, well, you have to consult an engineer to make sure it's safe. You have to like talk to an electrician if you have lights on it. You can't, it has to be like up to code.
Yep.
You don't want to get sued.
No.
You know, so all those things come to play for the students when we, what I'm planning to do is like when we start the park, my students will be involved in building it with the company. And we'll have to figure out the right proper ways of doing that too. You know, so.
Well, it's just like I was out there pretty much the entire day when they were putting up a spire. Yeah. And so getting to see them, you know, work with, you know, they had engineers out there making sure that things were going right and things were getting put in the way that they needed to. And watching that whole process that day was intense. And so
that's a lot. I mean, you think about the budget, you know, you look at the budget of that project and you're like, okay, there's $10,000 on just the wiring and there's, I don't know how much the foundation costs to put that in there, but I know that probably came out of his budget.
Yeah.
And it usually does. And so before you know it, you're not making as much as you initially thought if you don't plan that out.
Concrete gets expensive quick.
It does. And especially how tall that is and how far it has to go down with reinforcements and stuff like that. Yeah.
Things like that add up.
It does.
So I think my last question, so I've noticed this in my time as a student here at Tech and then now being a staff member here, I've seen skating and skateboarding really start making a comeback in recent years. Why do you think that it's making such a comeback?
I think there's a lot of things. I think that, I don't know, There's a certain kind of stereotype that's been dissolved over time about what skaters are or who they can be or can't be or whatever. And I think the Olympics helps that. It legitimizes it. It's not a bunch of hoodlums out, you know, doing stuff. And and so there's a book called Thank You Skateboarding, and it's a big hashtag on Instagram and Facebook. It's like people saying thank you for what it's given me. And I think when you see people like Hawk and Nyjah Houston and other people who are, you know, doing this and making a living at it and doing it, there's tons of people doing it. And it's all over Instagram. It's all over YouTube. It's everywhere. It's in there. Skateboarding's always been cool with fashion and graphic design. So all of that culture, you know, I think every 10 years it gets really high and then it drops down a little bit, but the Olympics really helped.
Yeah.
And some people think it hurt, but I don't think it did, you know, but yeah, I think anything that pushes the sport forward is going to be good.
Yeah. I loved watching skateboarding in the Olympics this year. It was awesome.
Yeah, I think so too.
It was a great time.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie, man, funny things happen in Ruston, and we could have an Olympic skateboarder here, you know, that's in the future, you know?
Yeah.
I think it could happen. There's some really good skaters here that just need a place to do it in the community around it. The student that when I have skate jams, it's about 100-mile radius of people. This last time there was a group from Houma. They actually have a skateboard company called Therapy. They came up and just to see what was going on because they saw the buzz on Instagram. And just them coming up, meeting new people, new people meeting them, it's just like, just such an exciting time, man. And it's just I told them all my friends, I think the community, like at a skate park or whatever, is like something that anybody could use. Like you go to a skate park, it's intimidating driving up, but once you get out, people are like, hey, what's up? And then you skate and someone's like, hey man, I think you got that trick. You're like, really? You think so? And then for long, you can do it, you know? I tell kids that all the time, and it's amazing just like what a little support does for their boost. And a kid will come up and go, hey man, thanks for pushing me, you know? I was like, if you had that every day,
yeah.
How great would it be, that support? So yeah, it's amazing. It's an amazing sport, you know? I can't say enough about it, but you know, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be a professor. With the roots going back, like I told you, to being a kid, looking at the graphics going, I want to do that. I'm going to do that, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. But, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
I loved giving this project is my giving back project, you know? And it's really rewarding, you know, to have people like you that see it and then want to talk about it. Yeah, it's, I look forward to these things now. If you asked me to do this like a year ago, I'd be like, I'm not going to get on board. I don't like to get on the mic or go out and talk in public. And you say, well, you're a teacher. I'm like, I'm passionate about that. It's different, you know, but I'm so passionate about this project. I'm ready to go talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. I think that's great. And I think that's what the project needs is some people to just get out there and push it, you know, and
it is.
That's what you got to do.
And I have the board that everybody's approach is different. You know, I'm like, do you want to donate? How much would you like to donate? And other people are like, we're doing this project, and they're more subtle about it. So you need all these different types of voices to, sometimes that voice is denied and another person could ask in a different way, you know, or provide a different way of communicating, you know.
Right.
So speaking of that, we just did a project with World and Vision.
Yes.
And that's something that
should friends of the podcast.
Yeah. That was an amazing collaboration, you know, with Nick and Marlon and the other crews at World and Vision. And just having that support, and Nick was a former student of mine.
I know. I'm friends with Nick and Marlon.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
That's crazy. It's like, they used to skate, you know, they still do. When we went out there to meet with them, Marlon, you know, at their warehouse, Marlon grabs a skateboard and does a kickflip. I'm like, what? I didn't know you guys skate. They're like, yeah, man.
I think that their brand is right on that edge of just almost being a skate brand.
Yeah. They talked about, you know, wanting to lean in that direction a little bit, you know.
So, I think they're getting there.
Yeah.
Some of their more recent designs and stuff they've been putting out, I'm like, this is like so close to being – a skate brand. I love it.
You can pick up a skate magazine and you look at the fashion and you look at current fashion is anytime. It's like, it's just a little step ahead. But
100%.
It's interesting.
All right. Well, I think that's it for today. Thank you all for listening to Beyond 1894. Joey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And y'all go check out the Ruston Skate Park project. Y'all can find them on Facebook and Instagram. It's a great thing, and I think it's going to be a really, really impactful for this community.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Beyond 1894. Please subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about this episode, check out our show notes. Beyond 1894 is produced by Louisiana Tech University's Office of University Communications.